This episode is sponsored by Privacy.com. It's like a burner phone for credit cards. To sign up for free and get a $5 credit, go to Privacy.com/GOG. That's $5 free to spend anywhere just by signing up. Privacy.com/GOG.
Grumpy Old Geeks, a weekly talk show hosted by Brian Schulmeister and Jason DeFilippo, discussing the finer points of what went wrong on the internet and who's to blame.
Welcome to Grumpy Old Geeks. I'm Jason DeFilippo.
And I'm Brian Schulmeister. You know, there's a drawback to this let's record at 8:30 in the morning because we're responsible adults thing.
What would that be, Brian?
Well, occasionally we aren't responsible adults.
Oh, did somebody have a night last night?
I hadn't gone to my local pub trivia for quite some time, and my exuberance outmatched my decreased tolerance, so I'm a little tired.
Aw. So this is it. Was it still at the Finn McCool's, now not Finn McCool's anymore?
It's still called Finn McCool's. I don't know how long it'll take until that change is made, but the inside has changed drastically. It looks very nice, I have to say. But yes, it was there again. And yeah, I don't have a team anymore because my team is spread far and wide. Some are in Ireland, some are in North Carolina, some are all over the place. But I join in with my our old competing team whenever they're down a person, and I got the text last night, come on down, we could use you. And hello.
how'd you do?
Did all right, did good. Ends a bit hazy, but I think we did well.
Flippity doobity boo.
Yeah.
That's not an answer, Brian.
Oh, it's not? Okay. How about another one of them vodkas, please?
We actually haven't asked you a question yet. So.
Well, there you go.
I have to come out for a pint and check out the new place soon.
Oh, definitely. Definitely you should come down. We should. I need to get some stickers from you, too, because we've had some people asking for them, and it's my job to send them out, apparently.
So I will get them over to you as soon as possible. I get them made, you send them out.
That's right. All right, so we have some follow-up. We talked a little bit previous episode about Slack going public, and as part of their big old S1 securities registration form that the company has to file with the Securities and Exchange Commission when you're going to do that, that was published online the other day, they are facing threats from sophisticated organized crime, nation-state, and nation-state-supported actors.
Okay. So, actor, model, dancer?
Yeah. Mattress. Model, actress. Anyways. I might still have a little bit of a buzz going on. Anyways,
I was going to say, you sound a little punchy this morning.
Yeah. So, like, any company that goes public has to basically state what the threats are to their organizations.
All don't these have a business model.
Well, they don't have to state that. That seems to be totally okay. But they do have to talk about threats that they've had, hacking incidents in the past and all of that. And Slack is quick to point out that they have not actually had any attacks from organized crimes, nation states, or nation state affiliates yet, but it's just that they have threats from these actors present an active risk to the company, which makes sense because it is a business-to-business kind of thing. Slack is primarily used for business communications, and of course, you know, if anybody wants to get after you for that, then they do that. So this is an article over on Motherboard, and they want to, they give you a good little warning at the end. Now is a good time as ever to reiterate the following. Slack does not have end-to-end encryption, and in some cases, it's possible for your boss to download and read your entire Slack history without your knowledge. So assume anything you say on Slack could be held against you in court, and consider talking trash on Slack to be generally a bad idea.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
There you go.
Yep, save that for Signal.
That's right.
I don't know about this one either with Slack. Like I said, I'm dialing it back quite a bit because it is a time suck. It is a time suck. So we'll see.
I mean, it's just, you know, the idea was it was supposed to, you know, take over business communication and be a better and easier and quicker way than email. But it's just become email. So
it kind of has. That's the thing. You get feature creep after a while, and then it just turns back into, you know,
the exact same. Yeah, the exact same devil you knew.
That's kind of it. And cat pictures, or in my case, dog pictures. Lots of dog pictures. Oh, so it turns out movie subscription service Cinema. Cinemia? Mm-hmm. Cinemia.
Cinemia.
Mamma Mia Cinemia is closing up shop. Oh, wait. Who thought giving away movie tickets for cheaper was a good idea?
Hold on. Not having a business plan didn't work out for once?
Nope. Didn't work. They saw MoviePass rocket up to stardom and then said, hey, let's do that.
Yes.
It didn't really work out.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah. I mean, who would have saw that coming?
Yeah, they don't say if they're still going to be in other countries, but they're definitely shutting down in the U.S. And it's unclear if people are going to get any of their money back.
I doubt it.
Yeah, we're out of money.
We'll see.
We're going to give you some back. Sorry. Yeah. And of course, there's another week, another article about unplugging over at the New York Times. Putting down your phone may help you live longer.
Okay. Is it because of the cancer?
No, it's not the cancer.
It's not the Wi-Fi unprovable cancer yet? Okay.
Yes, the unprovable brain cancer that we should all have by now, if that was such a thing. And this is basically about cortisol levels and stress hormones.
Mm.
Because you are always stressed out when your phone is around and when your phone is not around.
Because you have things like email and Slack and little stupid social networks that ping you and stress you out and give you little pellets of release of pleasure when somebody likes your stupid status. And yes, we are constantly 24/7 just being on the lookout for something. It's like being in the Sahara and feeling like there are lions around you all the time.
Yeah, kind of. And sometimes there are. They just wear business suits and send you emails at 3 a.m.
or tweet because they're the president.
That too. Yeah, I don't have Twitter or email on my phone anymore or Slack. So I still can't get rid of the habit, though, of keeping it on me all the damn time. And I still look at it. Yeah, I still pick up the phone and look at it, even though I know there's not going to be anything there.
That habit dies hard, right? I've been happily noticing that my screen time, thanks to Apple's ingenious way to keep you looking at your phone to see how often you're looking at your phone, has been going down considerably week by week. So I'm happy about that.
Yes. Apple's ingenious feature that they stole from Rescue Time.
Yes. So. And then
made it themselves. And...
In the news.
I love this first story over at the Next Web. Dead Facebook users could outnumber the living by 2069.
I'm just going to take that long?
Yeah, apparently. But so far, about 30 million of their users are dead, and about 8,000 users die every day. So you just run the numbers out.
To be fair, most of us are dead inside.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. We are the walking dead on Facebook. Well, at least you are still. I still haven't hit that 30-day mark so I can test, or the 32-day mark.
Right.
It's early May. I got to go back and listen to that episode and figure out, because I didn't write it down or make a calendar note.
You put it right in the calendar, Jason. That's what it's there for. So then you can you have something to check on your phone when you pick it up for no reason.
That's true. No, I completely forgot to put it in my phone and my calendar. So.
Right. So Facebook is going to turn into the Battle of Winterfell pretty soon.
Kind of. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yep, Mark Zuckerberg is the
is the Night King.
He's the Night King. Oh, it's so true, though. So true. And in interesting news, in the lovely state of Maryland.
Okay.
Maryland. Hmm. Doctors have used a drone to deliver a vital kidney transplant, and it's a first historic flight for drone technology.
Sadly, the patient passed away because the drone stopped off to drop off an In-N-Out burger on the way.
Exactly.
And arrived a little later than expected.
Yeah. This is, I was just thinking, I'm like, because they're filming this thing, they're doing all this stuff. And I'm like, did you really want to do this test with a live kidney? I guess she wasn't in that big of a rush.
I'm assuming that there were previous tests.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'm probably just within and out.
A and B tests.
Yeah. So it's an interesting drone, though. I mean, it's got redundant systems, redundant power supplies. So it's not going to run out of juice halfway there. It can carry a pretty decent payload.
Such as a kidney.
And it's got a really cool case that has, like, you know, the temperature and everything on the outside. So when it arrives, they can see if it's still viable. So it's a pretty cool little system. There's a video that'll be in the show notes if you want to check it out.
Very cool. Yes, it's just like those little futuristic Domino's pizza boxes that show the temperature on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
They're delivering it.
Pizza or a pancreas? It's
what? Pizza or pancreas? Cake or death? Mm-hmm. I'm in a mood today. Yeah. I found a really interesting article over on The Atlantic. Now, you and I have kind of checked out of the corporate environment, at least for the time being. Probably forever, since we're old and nobody wants to hire us.
Nobody will hire us.
But I did enjoy this article. Workers love AirPods because employers stole their walls.
So true.
Once upon a time, offices had walls inside them. They weren't glass like the conference rooms of 2019, but they were made of drywall and were usually painted a neutral color, like many of the walls you know and love. Over time, office walls gave way to cubicles, and now for many office workers, the cubicles are also gone. There are only desks. Yeah. So the last time I was still in a corporate environment, we still at least had pseudo cubicle walls. But I've been in many an office recently, and they are just gigantic open spaces where everybody can hear everything and see what everybody's doing. But, humanity finds a way, or as the article states, as Jeff Goldblum wisely intones in Jurassic Park, life finds a way. In an office where there are no walls, millions of workers have embraced a workaround to reclaim a little bit of privacy: wireless headphones. So now everybody's just sitting in an office with headphones plugged in and trying to shut everybody else out.
Yeah, this is not really a new thing. Even when I was still in the corporate world, or it wasn't even that corporate world, I was at JPEG Magazine, and we had a big open office plan, and everybody had headphones. You had to have noise canceling headphones because, if you just were sitting there and somebody would, the worst thing about, those open office plans is people just come up from behind and scare the crap out of you. So I always had a mirror on top of my computer. So I had two like rear view mirrors, on the side of your car. So I could see who was coming up behind me at any given time. Also adding to the stress level of an open office plan, which sucks.
Exactly. Just like we were just talking about with our phones, about being that out in the Sahara and feeling like there are lions are everywhere. That's exactly the problem with these open offices. And psychologists have studied this. And, when you can be approached from the rear, a little part of your brain is always activated and vigilant. So you're never truly in the moment. You're always like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die.
Well, considering that I was surrounded by like five designers at my last place, I was always on alert.
Right.
You put a programmer in a room with a bunch of designers. Oh, God, stress goes through the roof.
Yes.
Oh, what are you going to do?
That is true. Well, we haven't talked about crypto in a while, and I found this story. I have never owned a Jaguar or a Land Rover, although I've always liked the Land Rovers. But I've always heard that if you get a Land Rover, 99% of the time it spends time at the dealer rather than in your driveway getting fixed. But they are good looking cars. But they will soon, if you own one now, you may soon be able to earn crypto for allowing your car to transmit data about traffic, potholes, and other metrics to the car maker and interested parties.
Interested parties, eh? Who might that be?
Yes. Well, we're not sure yet. If the system is implemented, drivers would have the option to not share the data. I'm assuming this will be... Of course, it's going to be opt-in.
It's got to be opt-in. They can't
do it. It's got to be opt-in.
Yeah.
But we know how things roll out.
Sometimes it just... that button magically just gets clicked.
Yeah. I don't know how that happened. But the company is clearly hoping that people will opt in, and given that they're incentivizing it with digital tokens, owners will be able to earn credits by enabling their cars to automatically report useful road condition data. Although it's unclear how much granular control you'll have over who does and doesn't get the data. So there you go. The theory being you'll be able to automatically pay for tolls, parking, coffee, and anything else drivers might buy while in their cars. Of course, the assumption there is that all those things will take cryptocurrency, which at the moment they do not, and you'll be able to top up the total using regular money. But obviously there is some concern here.
Oh, really?
The precedent about people paying to give up information, obviously. Then we have information security, obviously. And then we have what I know will eventually come from this as well, which is, oh, by the way, if you'd like to have car insurance, they should get this data.
Oh, yeah.
Your always going driving information.
Yeah, I mean, they've already got
that's what happens.
Yeah, they've got those things out there already that you can plug into the ports to, send the data wirelessly to, I think it was called
Automatic. The show, Fergal did that while he was still here in the U.S. For cheaper insurance. And I yelled at him and he didn't care. He's like, it's cheaper, whatever.
Yeah, for now, until you screw up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wanted a Land Rover too before I got the Explorer, but the Explorer is just so damn nice. I had to get it. I know everybody says Land Rovers are nicer, but I know people that have them, and there are problems with them for sure. And
that is what I've heard.
Yeah,
that's why I have my Beamer.
And I will pass on a Jaguar.
Yeah. And we had another really good article over at the Atlantic this week. Twitter is not America. So shockingly, Twitter is not a good model of the world, even though we tend to think it is. And certainly act like it is. They've done some metrics on this. They've done some studies. In the U.S., Twitter users are statistically younger, wealthier, and more politically liberal than the general pop. So I guess it's just the bots that are far right.
I was going to say, if you take out all the Russian bots, then maybe it's different.
Yeah. So this is a Pew study. They are also substantially better educated. 42% of sampled users had a college degree versus 31% for U.S. adults broadly. I had no idea it was actually that low. 41% report an income of more than $75,000. Another large difference from the country as a whole. They're far more likely, 60%, to be Democrats or lean Democratic than to be Republicans or lean Republican, which is 35%. And but the Pew study was actually able to capture some more information about that, which is that, and this is not going to be surprising to any listener of this show, the Twitter of the platform's fanatics is very different from the norm. In other words, media Twitter is not median Twitter. First, they split up Twitter users and surveyed into two groups, the top 10% most active users and the bottom 90%. Among that less active group, the median user had tweeted twice total and had 19 followers.
Okay.
90% of Twitter has only tweeted twice and has 19 followers.
I love
Would you invest in a company where 90% of the users don't ever fucking use the service?
No, not really.
All right, so let's talk about the top 10%. That group was remarkably different. Its members tweeted a median of 138 times a month. Still not that much. So this is one of those things where Twitter, 99% of what you see on Twitter is coming from 1% of users, if not less. So, and 81% use Twitter more than once a day.
I figured it'd be more on a Pareto distribution, but this is, we're 1%, or I'm a 1%er then on Twitter.
Yeah, you're definitely a 1%er. Hell, I'm a fucking 1%er and I never use Twitter.
Yeah.
I really am comparatively. Yeah, it does not take much. So what I found interesting about this story is basically that, like, this story is kind of going on more the cultural impact that Twitter has versus the actual users and how this is not, we have to, you know, be very careful to understand that Twitter is not in any way, shape, or form at all an example of society at a whole. But what interested me is definitely more the actual economics of this, which is really Twitter is a house of cards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's hardly anyone using this damn thing, and it's worth so much money, but nobody's using it.
It's one of those things where I think the most people that use it nowadays, and it's not even as much as it used to be. When Twitter was in its heyday, you couldn't watch the news without it just being this person tweeted this. Here's another tweet. Yes. Here's some video. Yes. Here's tweet. And nowadays it's not even remotely like it used to be. So even, the major news outlets don't use it as much as they used to. So it might be, a downward trend.
I've seen it as well in the entertainment industry, because it used to always be, everybody would push their Twitter handles and every story about anything music or movies or TV related would call out to their Twitter thing, and people aren't doing that as much anymore. I've screamed on this show 1,000 times, Twitter has the best PR people in the world. I think it's going away.
Thanks, Putin.
This episode is sponsored by privacy.com. Privacy is the first payments product that keeps your personal information private while being even more convenient than using a regular credit card online.
Privacy lets you generate a brand new Visa card number for every purchase you make online with one click with their browser extension or mobile app.
And oh my God, that browser extension is so convenient. And look, we all are buying tons of stuff online, and Privacy gives you a temp credit card number for every site you buy from. Never forget to cancel subscriptions or trials ever again. And that alone is worth the price of admission, and that price is free. They make their money the same way debit cards do, with interchange fees paid by the merchants.
You know how skeptical we are of free services here on Grumpy Old Geeks, but these guys actually have a business model to back it up, which gives them the Grumpy Old Geek seal of approval. Jason actually reviewed this product when they first launched, and we're not just pimping this product because they paid us. I'm an actual customer, and I love what they're doing.
And they have saved me a ton of money. I've actually did it this week on something that I knew was going to be a pain in the ass to cancel for a subscription. And I porn. Set the, no, it wasn't porn, but that is actually a pretty good idea. So I set the yearly spending limit to $1 so it would not renew, when I knew these guys would renew me. And it was great. So if you use a password manager, and why don't you, if you listen to the show, you should use Privacy. You don't use the same password everywhere, so why should you use the same credit card number?
At least you shouldn't use the same password everywhere, people. Sign up takes less than 2 minutes. And like we said, it is completely free.
So far, they've saved their customers over $115 million in unwanted and unauthorized charges.
You can freeze cards and set spending limits. Cards locked to merchants, making them useless to thieves and hackers. Protect yourself from online fraud with virtual card numbers, and delete cards anytime. Kiss forgotten subscriptions goodbye.
To sign up for free and get a $5 credit, just go to privacy.com/GOG. That's $5 free to spend anywhere by just signing up.
Privacy.com/GOG. No brainer, people. Get on it now. Privacy.com/GOG.
Media Candy.
Well, of the two big cultural juggernauts, I am only involved in one. I could care less about the Avengers Endgame, but I was in on the Battle of Winterfell on Game of Thrones.
We should definitely say that Media Candy's probably going to have some spoilers. So
yeah, I don't. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, too bad. And I don't care if you spoil anything for Avengers for me. To be honest,
I'm going to talk really about it, but I'm not going to spoil anything for Avengers.
All right. Well, I'm going to try not to spoil too much on Game of Thrones either. But what I thought was really fascinating about it is, you know how there's always those metrics, like there's more video uploaded to YouTube every minute than the entirety of video that we had from World War II, or there's more photos posted every minute on Instagram than the entirety of photos taken in the 19th and early 20th century.
Yeah.
I think there was more words used on the Game of Thrones episode than anything else ever in the history of the universe, because even news sites had at least 10 to 15 articles about this episode of Game of Thrones.
Well, you can't get away from it. I mean, it is everywhere. And if you
it's
know
everywhere,
if you're not, if you don't know what happened by now, then you live in a cave. You definitely live in a cave. But yes. So did you enjoy it at least?
You know what? Here's the thing. While it was on, I thought it was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. Okay. An hour and a half of a TV show that was basically just a battle was riveting. I found it better than most movies that are ever made. My wife had, we had to stop it a couple times, and my wife had to go get a heating pad because she was clenched up so much. She was starting to get aches and pains in her shoulders because of the stress of watching it and like, what's going to happen? Oh my God. And of course, peering into the dark, trying to figure out anything, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
And I really did enjoy it. I thought it was a great episode, and I went to bed very happy, and I was like, wow, they could really just have ended the show right there, and I'd probably be okay with it.
You know, that's what I was thinking too. I'm like, oh shit, we got three more episodes left. I'm like, yeah,
the rest is just paperwork now. Like, we got rid of the big baddie, and we're just gonna find out who gets the throne and who gives a crap, really. So I would have been totally okay with that. I mean, obviously there's lots of questions that we still want to have answered, but I thought that would have been a fantastic ending to the show.
Yeah, the funny part about it is, like, now the last three episodes are going to be like the last, you know, the final ending of Lord of the Rings. It's like we're going to have 17 endings.
Like 17 different endings. I'm like, I had to piss 45 minutes ago. Who the hell is still getting on a boat?
I know. It's like, where's the fucking boat going? Take an Uber.
So that was my feeling night of. Now, the next day, I had some problems.
Okay.
And it was perfectly, I did finally find an article that perfectly encapsulated my feelings about why I'm a little unhappy with this. It's over on Slate, and it was written by, let me get the author's name really quick, credit where credit is due, Willa Paskin. And it's, the title of the article is Game of Thrones Taught Us to Want Death, Then It Changed the Rules. Mm-hmm. The subtitle being, Is It Wrong to Feel Disappointed When Too Many People Survive? And the whole point of this article, and I agree with this, is that Game of Thrones has pulled the rug out from under us. That is the whole point of the show. We started the damn show, first season, with killing off the main character.
Yep.
It's always been unpredictable. It's always treated its characters as they're toss away and throw away. And it doesn't matter how much we're invested in it. They can die at a moment's notice.
Red Wedding.
And the problem, yes. And the problem with this episode and what I'm worried about for the 4 hours that we still have remaining is this felt very normal.
Yeah.
All the major characters survived. I suppose the only surprise was it wasn't Jon Snow that killed the big baddie. It was Arya.
Yeah, it wasn't a surprise.
There's your spoiler. You know, so that it felt like fan servicing rather than what Game of Thrones has always been, which is completely unpredictable.
In sadness porn. It's always been sadness porn.
Yeah. And this didn't. You know, we had the people win and we had the good things happen and the characters that we wanted to do well did well. And the characters that we wanted to do poorly did poorly. And I'm really worried that Game of Thrones is going to go out on just a, we all saw it coming and we're all very happy with it. And there's no twists and turns note.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this all comes down to George R.R. Martin being a lazy bastard, not finishing the books. That's really what it comes down to. He was the cold-hearted motherfucker that killed everybody.
Or here's an idea, Hollywood. Wait until the fucking author finishes the story before you adapt it.
I think that they were worried he was just going to die because he's a little on the chubber side. But And, you know, they got to make some money. He takes too damn long.
That's true.
I saw the ending coming, but what I didn't see was the mic drop. That was just when she drops the knife, and it totally shot it like a mic drop. And I was
that was cool.
Yeah. I'm like, everything about that scene was, there's like five callbacks in that one little scene. And it was just like, damn, I've got chills just thinking about it now. It was so good.
Again, like I said, thoroughly enjoyed it, but I am worried that it's just becoming a regular show, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you watch the behind the scenes for the episode yet?
No, I don't like to do that. I'll come back and do that again after
it's all over,
all said and done. Yeah.
But it's ridiculous how much work went into that one episode. 11 weeks.
It was 53 days.
55. Yeah.
Or 55. Yeah. Which is, it was stunning. Be nice if we could have seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's bitching about this. So tell me
everybody is bitching about this. Now, my take is I have completely tweaked my TV. I did all the setup. I did brightness. I did contrast. I don't have the cinema mode on and all that other stuff. So my TV, it was a dark room. Like, I can't imagine what it'd be like to watch it during the day. That never would have worked. And we turned off all the lights and everything. So in a completely dark room with my TV dialed in, I thought it looked fantastic.
Yeah, I had no complaints about it. I'm like, I had all the lights were off. I had one candle going on the dining room or the living room table for ambiance. And then I just kicked back. It was a long episode, so I went through a bottle of wine during the episode, which
me too.
A couple pause breaks in there. Might have been actually a
refill.
Yeah, might have been a bottle and change on that one. So, you know, that ending, by the time it hit, I was a little bit, I wasn't a little bit, I was slongered when that thing finally ended. But I had no complaints about the brightness or anything, because I spend the time to dial my TV in. I'm not a savage.
Well, most people don't. And that's why there were a lot of complaints. And there were some really funny memes. I actually really enjoyed, like, people were posting pictures of just, you know, pure black saying, great episode so far.
Yeah.
But I thought it was used to wonderful effect. I mean, I think that that whole Dothraki lights set up and then you just see them start to flicker out one by one from far away. That was riveting. That was a phenomenal sequence and well done and well thought out. But yeah, if you did not have your TV dialed in, it was very difficult to see. And for many, many reasons, all of which, you know, are basically technical. People are starting to shoot in lower light because they can now. You couldn't do it with film. You can do it with digital. So things are darker. High definition televisions, cheaper ones, make it look worse than cathode ray tubes did. They handle dark better. High end ones do fine.
I've got the crappiest that I can get. I've got a TCL Roku, like 60 inch. And that was like, you know, the cheapest thing I could find. But it's, if you dial it in, it still can look good.
Yeah. Because everything is streamed now, we obviously have compression, and compression always deals with dark worse than it does with bright. And if you're watching through your cable company, you're getting double compression.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Just like the radio.
Yeah.
Me either. I watch through HBO now. So
yeah, me too. Me too.
So yeah, so you're getting, you know, double, triple compression sometimes, depending on how you're watching it. If you have not set your TV up correctly, you're going to see it very, very dark. And so there are lots of things that you can do to fix this if you were having a problem. And hopefully this will make people do it. Go. Tweak your settings, people.
Yeah, it's a Saturday. Crack a beer and just turn off the lights, close the curtains, and fix it. It's not going to take that long. But fortunately for you, people who don't do it, it looks like the rest of the season is going to be outside during the day, because I think they're pretty much tired of filming at night.
Yes, they got their fill there. So there you go. All in all, I did enjoy it, but it does have me a bit worried. So moving on from Game of Thrones, I actually found something. I've never heard of this site, ravetapes.com, and this was a serious blast to my past, and because we were just talking about back being in cubicles and all that sort of stuff. This took place back at the company that you and I both worked at together for the first time. What was that? What were they called? The Box Top, right?
Box Top. Yeah, Box Top's where we met.
Yeah, during the Box Top days, I used to go out to these raves called Moon Tribes, which were just out in the middle of nowhere. And this is like the old school stuff where you didn't know where to go and you had to go to like a liquor store and you pick up a map there, and then there'd be another map point, and then you just drive out to the middle of nowhere where they'd have this huge setup and a bunch of people would just go out and dance all night. And a friend of mine who I used to go to them with posted a link, and there's, you can go listen to a September 1994 set for Moon Tribe from John Kelly, and I was at this one. So it's kind of cool, and it's very old school EDM music, but I thoroughly enjoyed listening to it. It was a good blast from the past.
I'll have to check that out, because I do like old school EDM. I'm not so much into what the kids are listening to today, but I like the old stuff a lot still.
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy this set. Go check it out.
So you, this is like a scavenger hunt to find the thing? You had to like
that's
find...
what the... Well, they were completely illegal, right? No permits, just out in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, what you would do is you would hear about it. It was every full moon, so we'd hear about it. And then, you know, the word would pass along. This is before the social medias, that you would, you know, go to this location and you'd get a map that would tell you to go to another location. And then you get a map that would tell you to go to a third location. And then eventually you just end up out somewhere in the middle of the desert.
That's pretty awesome.
The police didn't find you.
Oh, man, that sounds like fun. I wish people did more stuff like that, you know?
Well, the problem with people doing it these days is people die. We were all relatively responsible and not idiots. Nobody ever died at a moon tribe, as far as I know.
Yeah, and people would tweet about it, and there goes everything. Yeah,
exactly. All of a sudden, you have 10,000 people instead of the 1,000 to 2,000 that we would get. So
we need a secret Usenet group for those types of things.
I tell you, go back to Gopher.
I still hated Gopher. It was no good.
Me too, but...
I loved Usenet, but I hated Gopher. Except when I was getting, like, you know, a 175-piece movie that I was trying to download, and it was missing, like, 162, and then you couldn't get the piece to recompress it. Oh, those were the days. Mm-hmm. So I watched Avengers Endgame.
Did you go to a theater?
Hell no!
Is there a full quality version out there?
Hell no!
Or is
it
a handheld? Well, okay, I can't do the handheld bullshit.
And see, I grew up at Paramount watching dailies and screeners and things like that, and I like shitty
quality.
Well,
I wouldn't say you grew up.
Well, when
you were in a functioning adult. Well, not functioning.
No, I wasn't.
You were an adult.
I was like 26 when I worked at Paramount. I was not a functioning adult. I'm still not a functioning adult.
That's why I removed the functioning.
Yeah, yeah. I'm old. I'm not an adult. But I used to love watching those, not the full res version. So for me, these things are fine. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I actually got to say, I thought it ended well. I thought they did a really good job.
I understand it is quite a bit of fan servicing, as it should be, if you're wrapping up, you know, 22 movie arc.
So. Yeah, exactly. So it, for me, it like, you know, everything, they put a button on the things that they needed to put a button on. It was silly in the parts that it needed to be silly. And I think it really, since I didn't really care that much, it was much easier to enjoy it.
Yeah, because I've seen people posting, you know, tears and crying and emotionally verklempt over this. And I'm like, I am not invested in this at all. So I have a feeling I might enjoy it. Who knows?
I thought it was clever. I thought they did a good job with it. So all in all, for me, Avengers Endgame, a thumbs up. You know,
now,
I give it a thumbs up.
Since we've already done a little bit of spoilers, and I'm not going to ask you for specifics or anything, but is it actually Endgame or... Are we getting reboots? Are we getting more movies?
Oh, we're getting movies. Yeah. Oh,
of course. So it's not Endgame. Avengers pause. Avengers end of contract for some actors.
Exactly. That's
is what they should have called it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Avengers. I'm tired of doing this shit is what is pretty much what it is.
Okay. That's all right then. That's kind of what I figured.
Yeah. And since this is the finale season, I watched the Orville season finale last night.
Mm-hmm.
I want my hour back.
No, you did not enjoy it. Okay.
No, it was an utterly pointless episode. Utterly pointless. And it did not move the ball.
Just like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Sometimes utterly pointless.
And you know why it was utterly pointless? I'm going to give a little spoiler here. It doesn't say anything.
I haven't been watching, so it doesn't matter.
Time travel. This was...
Well, just like Star Trek.
I was going to say, because I'm glad you mentioned Star Trek, because this is exactly like the Star Trek time travel episodes, which is like... The plot does like nothing changes from point one to point two. So the entire episode can be ignored. It's not part of it. It doesn't matter.
There is the theory of the Mobius.
Yeah. Time becomes a loop. Oh, even a stop clock is right twice a day. Love that song.
Yeah.
And I watched the Gotham series finale.
Okay. With the new Batwoman.
Yeah. With the Catgirl or Catwoman, not Batwoman.
Catgirl, whatever.
Yeah. Cat broad.
I'm so into superheroes, can't you tell?
Yeah. Could have skipped that one for sure. That was the weakest series finale I think I've probably seen in a very long time. It brings me back to these old, when they do these types of things like Smallville, you know, all you want to see in Smallville is you want to fucking see Superman fly.
Right.
In Gotham, you want to see Batman. And, you know, you just
no kinda, Batman.
Well, you get some ears at the end. That's about it. I mean, that's really about it.
That'd be like if they ended, what was that? If they ended, oh crap, what's the name of the movie? The standalone Star Wars one.
Rogue One.
If they ended Rogue One and you just saw like the tip of Darth Vader's lightsaber.
Yeah, just the tip.
Just the tip.
Oh man. But yeah, it was a kind of a weak one. It was a weak season for finales for television. That's for sure.
Okay.
Now, Spotify, Brian, you and I have to have a heart to heart because you know people at Spotify.
I do, but I don't know people that make the money decisions. They just do all the legal bit.
Well, you need to move up the chain because they bought the Paracast studio, the podcasting studio, for $56 million.
Well, the problem here, Jason, and a lot of people have been reaching out to me recently, people that know I've been doing a podcast for a long time and have been, you know, podcasting is in the zeitgeist. It's in the mainstream now. Mm-hmm. And have said, well, all this stuff is really great for you. What's going to go on? And I'm like, no, because we're not a studio. Mm-hmm. We're a standalone single podcast.
Yep.
And ain't nobody looking to buy us. They're looking to buy the studios for some reason. So,
well, maybe we should start a studio is all I'm saying. I got enough gear.
Geeks Network.
I got enough gear and I got a place to record. So, and anybody that says, hey, but you're in the Valley. Nobody wants to go to the Valley. 2 miles away from me is Joe Rogan's studio.
That's where
studio.
All the porn's made.
Yeah, that too. Joe Rogan is 2 miles away from me, and everybody, if Elon Musk will come to the Valley, then you can too. Motherfuckers.
That's right.
So I bring up this story because, not just to make myself feel sad because we're not making any money off podcasting, really. Mm-hmm. I found one on the Parcast Network because I hadn't heard of them, really. I haven't paid too much attention because I try and not look at news of other people doing well in podcasting because it just makes me sad.
It's like your own sadness porn.
It really is.
Game of podcasts.
Yeah. Every time someone gets acquired, a little bit of me dies inside. So I found this podcast called Small Town Dicks.
Hold on a second. Is it true crime?
Yes, it is.
I can't imagine.
Believe it or not.
Nobody has gotten into the market of true crime podcasts yet.
I know. And I started to listen to it. I'm like, I'm going to hate this. But it's with Yardley Smith.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I heard Yardley Smith and Zibby Allen, right?
That's it.
They were interviewed on Corolla's podcast, I think. And I remember hearing about it and going, actually, that's kind of interesting.
So, and it's got two other detectives on there who are twin brothers. And they, Dan and Dave, identical twin detectives. And they go to actual small towns and they get people who worked like actual cases. They change the names to protect the guilty and the innocent. And it's really well produced. So Parcast does a decent job with production. Mm-hmm. And I think I found this on, was it Mueller, She Wrote? And yes, I know before I said Mueller, She Wrote, I like to play with pedants sometimes and make them upset. Mueller, She Wrote, they were talking about this one. So I'm like, okay, I'm still going through trying to find, you know, new shows to listen to figure out what the state of the art is out there. And I listened to it and I'm hooked. It's really well done. The episodes aren't too long, and listening to the detectives go through what they go through to catch these people, and in some cases not, it's fascinating. I'm not a true crime guy, but this kind of broke the mold for me a little bit. So
now do you find yourself going, huh, Lisa Simpson's telling me about true crime?
Yeah. Yeah. apparently there's a story in one of the previous seasons about her and her run-in with some really nasty people. So I haven't gotten to that one yet. I'm working my way backwards, but I don't have a whole lot of time to listen to a lot of stuff. So when I do have time, I like shorter shows that can just knock them out like this one. So it's pretty cool, though. Huh. I recommend.
Are you saying you like shorter podcasts is what you're saying, Jason?
Bite me, Brian. Just bite me.
At the library.
I picked up The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power by Shoshana Zuboff.
So some light reading?
Light reading. 700 pages of light reading. I can kill a man with this if it was a real book. I started with the audiobook, which is a 24-hour audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and I bought the Kindle version because I want to be able to mark it up because there are so many great things in this book about the history of surveillance capitalism state that we have right now and the history of Facebook and Google and all of the, you know, the backroom deals that went on with government to allow basically the wholesale slurping of our data.
Right.
It's scarier than I thought. It really is. It's not even, I mean, it's not even close to what I thought. And I think bad thoughts. It's,
yes, we have established that.
Yeah. You're going to have to pick this book up at some point because
all right,
it really is enlightening on just the history of how all this stuff happened. And yeah, there's no, we're screwed. That's pretty much, I mean, I'm only like 20% into the book and we're screwed.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go and read it and I'll try to catch up with you and maybe we can talk about it again in another segment because I do need, I was hoping to get back to just a lighthearted tech book, but or sci-fi, but I'll go read this next because I finished a book as well. I'm doing my tour of suggestions from friends about their favorite books of all time. And I read another one that a friend suggested. It's called The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, by Junot Diaz.
Yeah.
I think it's Wao as well, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It was nice to take a break from sci-fi and tech and just read stuff. That is just old books, you know, regular books. A lot of the reviews call it kind of magical realism, a la 100 Days of Solitude. I'm not so sure about that. Realism, yes. I didn't get a lot of magical. The one other thing I would say about this book, definitely worth reading. If you read it, go get a real book. Go get a physical book because a lot of the writing, a lot of it plays out in the footnotes. The footnotes are beyond important. Their footnotes are a part of the process of the author and how he wrote the book. And there's one thing that I can complain about the Kindle app is I still don't think that it handles footnotes well. So I kept bouncing back and forth and losing my place and not knowing where I was left off from. And it just doesn't seem to always work. And that's probably the coder's problem rather than the format itself. But I've never enjoyed reading footnotes on the Kindle. And that's a very important part of this book. So
okay,
get the physical one if you're going to read it. But thoroughly enjoyed it and happy to go back to sci-fi now. It was like a palate cleanser. Reading two very, very non-sci-fi books. But I'm ready to get back to it for a little bit. And then I'll dip back into my friend's best of lists again in the future.
Moron of the week.
Imagine you've stepped outside on a crisp, clear autumn evening, Jason. Ah, the beautiful night sky, the awe of the cosmos. How very small we are in this vast universe. Tiny specks on this pale blue dot. Lucky to exist in this geological instant. The Earth is hospitable to life. Truly, the sky gives us the gift of perspective. Wait, is that the Pepsi logo? Yeah. Here we go. It could be at least starting in 2021. Earlier this month, the Russian company StartRocket confirmed to Futurism that it was working on launching satellite ads to be viewed in the night sky.
Heard about this one.
Yes.
Not good.
Its first client is PepsiCo. The PepsiCo rep later confirmed in what we call damage control that the company did partner with StartRocket for an exploratory test advertising an energy drink, but had no plans to continue advertising in space. So if you go to StartRocket's website, which the article calls StartRocket's website depicts a dystopia that I cannot possibly capture in words. You can go see a video detailing its vision with ads rising in the sky behind the Golden Gate Bridge, the Eiffel Tower, a Bali Temple, London's Tower Bridge, and Arctic icebergs competing with the Aurora Borealis. This is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
Somebody stop these people. The ads would be projected by a constellation of satellites orbiting at about 280 miles above Earth, each equipped with light reflecting Mylar sails. So the tech is kind of cool, but let's not ever, ever, ever make this happen.
The tech is actually neat. The idea is neat, but the execution would be god awful. So Elon Musk needs to, like, you know, retask SpaceX to start making freaking space lasers. Shoot these things down.
We need to be able to shoot these things down. They are not alone in the for-profit entertainment satellite game, so it's not just the Russians. ALE, A-L-E, is the Japanese startup behind Sky Canvas, a project to launch a series of satellites that release shooting stars on demand, bringing a, quote, whole new level of entertainment, end quote.
Oh, God.
And this is going to happen. Their first show will take place over Hiroshima in spring 2020. I'm sure there are no people in Hiroshima that will not be frightened by things falling out of the sky anymore.
Yeah, really?
And there's a new U.S.-based company called Elysium Space, which takes artificial shooting stars to the next level. It puts on a show made from your loved one's ashes. Yes, you can pay to launch your cremated remains of your loved ones, which will orbit Earth for a couple of years as friends and family can track its journey via their app.
Yay.
And when the satellite falls out of orbit and burns up in the atmosphere, you get a shooting star. However, they have not confirmed that this will take place exactly where you want it to. You don't know, because satellite reentry is often tricky, and we don't know if it'll be during the day or it'll happen on the other side of the planet. So all of that seems a bit silly.
Feedback loop.
I want to give a special mention for the single story that has been sent to us by the most people ever. This one's definitely winning.
Definitely winning.
Everybody sent us this link, or different links about the story. I picked the one from the BBC. Scooters hacked to play rude messages to riders. Lime Scooters in Brisbane have been making suggestive and offensive comments to riders after pranksters swapped audio files on some vehicles. Clever.
Yeah, it's clever. It's a neat.
Very clever.
It's a cute hack.
Yeah, so well done. Lime said the prank was not funny. I say it is. And to be honest, this is like they found 8 scooters that had files swapped.
Yeah, it's
so
not a big thing.
It's not a ton, but it'd be great if they all went to the cloud. And if you just hacked it once, it did it to all the scooters. How awesome would that be?
Oh, yeah.
Why are they not using the cloud?
We need an offensive scooter army out there.
Yes.
Where the fuck you want to go, Joe? God. Well, thanks, everybody. And I mean everybody for sending us that
link. Yes, everybody.
And over at Patreon, we've got some new subscribers, Rabbi Stephen Roberts, Anton, and Clark. And we got a message from Benjamin. I remember you guys talking to Super Dave Bittner about these little gadgets.
Yes, and he sent us a link from PC Gamer. A former student zapped $58,000 worth of PC equipment using a USB killer device. And here's the problem. The idiot filmed himself doing it.
Dumb shit. This was going to be in Moron of the Week, but a couple people sent this to us, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Allison wrote in, I've also used and loved BB Edit for years, but I get how someone who's never used it may balk at the price. FYI, they have a freeware version called Text Wrangler on the Mac App Store if anyone who's looking to test out some of its simpler features. I also think they may have a free trial of BB Edit on their website. They do, actually. But I don't fully recall. And she says, as far as the shirts go, they're pretty responsive on Twitter, so I could try to engage them and appeal to their better nature over there. That would require work. But yeah, Text Wrangler for most people actually is fine.
Would probably be enough. Yeah,
I just do some crazy stuff with, you know, searching and grepping and save strings and things like that. So, and since I have gotten this new version of BB Edit, there really isn't a whole hell of a lot different from 10. There really isn't.
Yeah, I don't feel the need to upgrade personally. Ivan also wrote in, hey, Grumps, I'm sure you already know about this. Tesla announced their new super powerful car computer, which can autonomously drive a car. I'm watching a new recording of their presentation starting at 1 hour and 10 minutes of the video, and I'm just blown away by the sophistication of this piece of technology. You've been talking that if anyone is going to make self-driving cars, it would be Tesla. I think it's finally happening. If I were you, I'd buy more Tesla shares. These guys know what they're doing. I still think it's further away than Elon does, but we always kind of said that Tesla is probably going to be the one that cracks the nut first. So I'm still getting my shares.
Yep. They've got the most data. They have the most datas. Amanda writes in, just a fast thank you for getting the word out about 1Password. I recently went through a debacle with one of their competitors related to getting back into my password manager after someone on their end locked me out as part of an update. Their processes seemed arcane, even to their own tech support people, and by the time they corrected the situation, I was already a happy 1Password subscriber. Then began the epic port-over party, yeah, that takes a while, which took 2 tries, one with adult beverages and one without. Try number 2 was successful. Go figure. I'm funnier when I drink, but my typing suffers. Keep your grump on, Amanda. Thank you, Amanda. I'm glad you've joined the family.
And somebody please write 1Password and talk to them about advertising on our show again. They did once.
Yeah, come on.
Of course, now they know they don't have to.
Bastards.
And over on PayPal, we got donations from Jeremy, Simon, Raymond, and Steven. Thank you all so much.
And over on Twitter, Third in Command writes in, beat spending your day being a Twitter troll, I guess. And this is a story about a beluga whale that was found with this harness on it that some people think may belong to the Russian Navy. Beluga whales are my favorite animals in the planet, so I could not look at this article. So, Brian, would you care to sum it up?
You basically just did.
Okay.
They found 2 whales that had straps around them, and they removed the straps, and it said equipment of St. Petersburg written inside of it.
Okay.
So nobody really knows exactly what's going on there.
Or maybe they were just having a beluga, you know, S&M party.
Maybe they're just tracking them. Who knows? Oh, or that. Yeah. JC sent us a link from Ars Technica, the SIM swap the U.S. isn't using. Yes, SIM swap hackers rely on intercepting a one-time password sent by text after stealing a victim's banking credentials or by using the phone number as a password reset fallback. And there's a way to fix this, and we're just not doing it in the U.S., and even Africa's ahead of us here.
And Mustavo writes in, League races drones by brainwaves alone. Well, how about that?
Yes, they stare at a black square, and wherever their eyes move, they move the stupid... They watch the last episode of Game of Thrones. And that's about it. Yeah, good times. Adrian writes us, coffee on the blockchain. I know you like blockchain, guys. And this is a picture of Moyi, the world's first blockchain coffee.
And over at GOG.show, Seth writes in, regarding ads and closeout X's that actually just take you to a download page or the app store, my theory is that that's not happening because they think you'll actually download what was being advertised. My theory is that it's designed to generate hits so the ad company, maybe Google, can manufacture fake results to convince their clients that their ad dollars aren't being wasted. It's a way to manipulate data. What do you think? No, I don't think so, because they need the installs.
I don't think so.
It's not the click-throughs. Yeah. It's the installs that would go through that. Yep. So, I
nice theory, but we disagree.
Yeah, nice theory on that. But since everything that has that little X is for an app or a game, then they still need the installs to actually happen.
Yeah, no install, no payment.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. And Herbert writes us to the Wall Street Journal article today on accounting trickery by Uber and Lyft, worth a read. Here's my favorite quote. The company's choice in defining the customer isn't justified by common usage. Typically, a customer is the one receiving a service and paying for it. Yet Uber explicitly claims that drivers are our customers. It calls passengers end users. Not only does this allow them to engage in financial shenanigans, but it also suggests they have no responsibility for the end users. Who would have thunk it? Just us, since the fucking day they launched.
Since the day they launched. Oh, well. Christopher writes in, if you use this app, the password of the private Wi-Fi networks you connected to leaked online. And this is a little app called Wi-Fi Finder, which I need to go back and look because I kind of think that I used this.
I think I installed that at one point.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go take a peek at that. But fortunately, most of the Wi-Fi networks back then are gone now since I've upgraded to my Eero, and I know I haven't used it.
And
since
I really
then.
Used it to find public Wi-Fi spots, so I wouldn't have gotten any passwords to any of them, and they're not my Wi-Fis anyway.
Yeah, seriously. So who gives a shit?
So not too worried about that. I did like the very end of the article, though, where it says they talk about their major reputable companies can also leak or simply intentionally misuse user data. Duh. But you should be skeptical about anytime a service is offered to you free of charge.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Downloading a random app with this level of access to your data is virtually no different than unlocking your phone and handing it to a total stranger.
I wonder what podcast has been saying that for a couple of years. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. And Chris writes in, interesting debate. Let your partners produce enough content to make your app store de facto, then cite security concerns when in a powerful
epileptic position.
Epileptic seizure position.
Oh, man, it must have been a good night.
And this
last
is
night.
A link over. Yeah, man, this is a link over at the BBC. Apple defends removing parental control apps. Now, I get where Chris is saying here, but I disagree with him as well. Apple gave all the app people time to fix it. They told them they don't want you using the MDM or mobile device management because that's too powerful for what you actually need. People use MDM for all kinds of nefarious things, so Apple wants people not to use that. There were workarounds, there were different ways to do it, and anybody that fixed their app and didn't use MDM control is still there. It's only the people that decided they didn't want to invest any money into updating their apps.
There you have it. So, it has been explained. Yeah. Shauna writes in, so I know it's been a while since you used the old HTML programming skills, but I really need your recommendation because I want to build a website, but I don't want to build it using an online thing like Squarespace. I want something like Ye Olde Front Page. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I just remember stripping tons and tons and tons of front page code out of sites that I'd been asked to take over.
Oh, yeah. Hey, BB Edit for that. They had to actually fix front page button. Yep. But she wants it for the Mac. I want the source code, so if I switch hosts, I won't lose the hours of work. I'm not liking how WordPress, blah. Thanks, guys. Stay grumpy and Deliveroo.
Yeah, I did a quick Google. Dreamweaver, RapidWeaver, and Sandbox. They're all names I've heard of out there. I've never used any of them, so.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, Dreamweaver does still exist, and you can get it for the Mac. I used Dreamweaver, when it first launched, like,
me too.
15 years ago.
I used it to, like, knock out, like, some one-pagers that, you know, people weren't paying a lot of money for.
That was kind of it. I just hated the code that thing spit out. But, yeah, I remember when Dreamweaver... I actually ran it on a Compaq.
that I bought for Quake back in the day. But it's still out there, but you're going to have to get one of those lovely, lovely subscriptions probably to Adobe.
Mm-hmm.
I think they might have a standalone version you can buy, but I say get Coda 2. Coda 2 is by Panic, the makers of much fine software. You are going to have to code a lot of stuff by hand, but as far as coding goes, Coda 2 is the only thing that I still have and that I keep up to date on my Mac for doing any kind of web dev.
Yeah, I've got it too. So it kind of depends on where you're at with your HTML skills.
Yeah.
If you're good enough, use Coda 2. If you need something that's WYSIWYG and drag and drop, then go with Dreamweaver.
Yeah, and there are trials for both. So you can try them both out and see which one really kind of resonates with you. But personally, I say Coda 2. And they've got Coda 3 coming pretty soon. So if you do end up buying it, Coda's more expensive. Well, not really. Dreamweaver is cheaper, but you over time you pay more. You can just buy a copy of Coda 2 for $99 and you own it.
Then you're done.
Yeah. And if Coda 3 is coming soon, you'll probably get an upgrade for free. So check those out. Links will be in the show notes at gog.show/341.
Wow. And over at iTunes, we have a 5-star rating from NYC Steph 18. You finally got me to give you the review you deserve. Woo! On long drives, I love listening. I save a number of episodes and then drive, and the drive just flies by. They never seem out of date. Oh, really? I always provide useful information and some that is just funny, which is also useful on long drives. I've been part of this world since I bought my first compact computer before compact even had hard drives.
Oh, double, so I guess double I also compact. Fallout,
getting the plugs today. So I guess I also qualify as an old geek. Keep up the geeking. Thanks so much.
If you want your question or comment read on the show, head on over to gog.show/support and send us your feedback or questions that we can read on the air. And if you're so inclined, please head over to gog.show/iTunes and toss us a 5-star and snarky review. And a little bit of update here on the Overcast starring that we've asked you guys to do, and we appreciate it very much. We're number one! We're number one! Actually, now are ahead of Joe Rogan. So we have the top spot and most recommended in all of Overcast.
I have two thoughts on that. One, I feel like we're playing a game that nobody else knows we're playing. And secondly, all that and $5 still gets you just a cup of coffee.
Yeah, that's the one thing. It's like, oh, maybe we'll see a nice uptick in people who subscribe to the show. Nope. Not a bit. Mouse farts would have probably moved the needle farther, but it's been fun. But still keep it up because maybe someday it'll, you know, I have no idea, but it's just fun. Keep those stars
I just
coming.
Feel that everybody that uses Overcast is already listening to us.
Yeah, probably.
Closing shout outs.
I just want to give a closing shout out to friend of the show and listener Suzanne. Happy birthday. It's your birthday today.
Happy Make birthday. It's your birthday. Happy birthday. Until next time, I'm Jason DeFilippo.
And I'm Brian Schulmeister. Thanks for listening to Grumpy Old Geeks. Support the show and keep us on the air. Go to patreon.com/GOG. Toss us a buck a month and we'll love you forever. If you'd like to give a one-time or recurring donation, go to gog.show and click the PayPal button in the sidebar. Show notes for this episode are at gog.show/341. From there, you can find links to old episodes, leave feedback, ask questions, and get links to stuff we like. Stay grumpy.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.